Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. All week on WBUR, we're covering the world of food, from farming to health trends to robots, as part of our Future of Food series. Radio Boston will broadcast a special hour with a live audience tomorrow from WBUR City Space on the future of dining. And there's still time to reserve your free ticket at wbur.org/cityspace. But today, we're looking at food insecurity. Massachusetts is one of the wealthiest states in the country, yet 1 in 11 people struggle with hunger, according to the nonprofit Feeding America, and that includes 1 in 9 children. Families with children represent almost 60% of those who qualify for SNAP. That's the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, previously known as food stamps. Shannon Yaramchuk's family was one of them. She now helps feed others as a board member at the Food Bank of Western Massachusetts. She also works at the Corporation for Public Management, which helps find jobs for people receiving public assistance. And Yaramchuk told us about a time when she and her 4 children didn't know where their next meal would come from.
Back in the end of 2012, I was married with 4 children, and my husband and I were undergoing some financial strain. And we made a plan for him to go back to Kentucky, to where he's from, and start working and sort of make a way for us to move back down there. Unfortunately, it didn't pan out, and the children and I were left here to sort of fend for ourselves, but I didn't want it to sound so bad. So we were pretty quickly evicted from our apartment because my youngest child was 2, and I couldn't work. I didn't have childcare. I didn't qualify for any services or anything like that. So we spent about 6 months kind of jumping around from family member to family member until they could finally place us in a shelter. And when they finally placed us in shelter, we stayed in shelter for about 2 years.
And when it came to feeding your family, where did you first turn for help? You said you didn't initially qualify for SNAP. So was it to soup kitchens or food banks? I mean, where do you go when you're in that gap?
Absolutely. That's the problem. Like the first 6 months, I think, were probably the hardest because I didn't have any benefits. And it was literally like, where do I go? And I would apply for, I would apply for SNAP and apply for cash. And because I was still married, technically, and he started working, it looked like there was income. But I didn't have access to any of it. So I utilized the food banks. I utilized the pantries. I got a list of the ones that were close by. I got friends to take me there so that I could get a little bit of something for the kids and I to eat, just to make our way. And eventually, after several months of being able to finally prove that we were abandoned, I was finally approved for some SNAP benefits. And that, of course, made a huge difference.
I've heard you say elsewhere, Shannon, that, being food insecure doesn't mean that you're starving. And as you describe your situation, you had food, but it means that you don't know where that next meal is coming from. I mean, can you describe what that weighs on you as a mom or your kids, emotionally and mentally as well as physically?
Absolutely. It's really frustrating as a mom who, suddenly is the sole provider and solely responsible for making sure that the kids are raised and fed and clothed and housed and warm. And so it was a little bit frustrating to know I had a good deal of SNAP benefits, but getting to and from to utilize them was always an issue. Especially when we were in the hotel, we lived close. The closest thing to us was a convenience store, Pride. So if I wanted food, I would have to go there unless I can arrange someone to come and pick me up and take me and give me a ride and all that stuff, because there was no bus that goes back and forth at that hotel. So that was an issue. And really it's, I think food insecurity really, really became a thing for me when I got out of shelter. Clearly it was an issue in the very early days when I didn't qualify for any benefits, so it was trying to just scrape by until something would come through. But at the point that I finally was starting to become stable and started working for Corporation for Public Management, they took all of my benefits. So now I was faced with I had moved out of the shelter, so now I had housing costs and I had utility costs and phone bills and vehicle expenses, gas and things like that, on top of food expenses. So that, I think, has been the most challenging thing.
Yeah, you're making more, but then there are more costs that go with it as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So I really didn't feel like for a long time, I really didn't feel like I had gotten anywhere. I'm like, this kind of feels the same as it did before. I mean, I'm grateful that I have a place to live and everything is, you know, covered, but it's still a struggle. And if anything bad happens to me and I get hurt or I lose my job or something, then we're up a creek, you know, absolutely up a creek.
So I wonder, Shannon, what policy prescriptions you might draw from your own experience. You know, you're in a much better place now, I understand, where you're providing for your family, you've got a job, mm-hmm. and are able to actually give back now as a member of the board of the Greater Boston, or the Western Mass Food Bank, I should say. But, you know, what was sort of the key to getting there? I mean, was it education? Was it getting housing? Was it SNAP benefits? I mean, can you draw from your experience what some solutions might be to food insecurity?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the frustrating things about food insecurity and this issue is that it's not a standalone issue. There are many factors, many variables to what contributes to an individual being food insecure. And so the solution is not a magic bullet. The solution is something that would cover all of those variables, whether it be homelessness or education or mental health issues or recent incarceration. You know, all these are factors for keeping people food insecure. And the solution really revolves around all of those factors and really working as a community to fight hunger.
Shannon Yaramchuk works at the Corporation for Public Management and serves on the board of directors of the Food Bank of Western Massachusetts. Shannon, thanks so much for speaking with us on Radio Boston.
Thank you so much for having me.
And joining me now from Springfield is Andrew Morehouse. He's the executive director of the Food Bank of Western Massachusetts. Andrew, thanks for joining us on Radio Boston.
My pleasure.
So we just heard one of your board members there, Shannon, saying that you know, the solution to food insecurity is not a magic bullet. But in your view, what are the best ways, best strategies to fight food insecurity in Massachusetts?
Well, clearly they're multi-tiered. And before I answer that question, I just have to say when I hear Shannon's story over and over again, I'm so moved and inspired by her, what she's managed to accomplish, what she's managed to overcome. It didn't come out in the story, but she's now gainfully employed and has recently finished school and got a master's degree in nonprofit management. So she's an example of what can be when society's like the United States should rally around its citizens who are, you know, struggling to get by and get ahead in life.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, yes, it's a multi-tiered approach to solve hunger. There is no one solution, at least in our opinion. You know, our mission is to feed our families in need and lead the community on hunger. So clearly we're going to feed people who are struggling to get by, who don't know where their next meal is coming from, who are food insecure for as long as they need it until they're back up on their feet and able to meet their own family expenses, including food. But, you know, if we're ever going to end hunger as we know it, we really do need to address the underlying causes. And there are many. They are complex. And that is – they're going to take time to solve. But in Shannon's case, what she was describing very clearly, which so many people face, is this notion of the cliff effect where individuals who are at rock bottom and receiving some form of public assistance, which no one particularly wants to do but have no alternative, work their way out of it by getting the job training they need and a lot of good luck and opportunity to overcome all kinds of barriers to get a job again that hopefully will support one's family, but typically at a minimum wage income, that's not the case. And as you acquire that income, oftentimes, as she describes, people will face what's called a cliff effect, where suddenly because they're receiving income, they no longer qualify for public benefits and therefore they're immediately stripped from them. And that puts them in a really precarious situation where they have nothing left to fall back on but this minimum wage income, which oftentimes doesn't cut it.
Well, is that what you're seeing more broadly, Andrew, among your clients? Because, I mean, as we look across the state, we see remarkably low unemployment levels. My understanding is that you're servicing many more folks now than you did before the recession, which might surprise some folks because you'd think, hey, haven't we recovered? But perhaps those people are in the gap you're describing. They're working. They are drawing a paycheck, but it's not quite enough to reliably put food on the table.
That's certainly part of the gap and part of the demographic of folks who are food insecure who we see, because we have to remember that unemployment figures are misleading. Anyone who works 1 hour a month is considered employed under those unemployment statistics, or they are part of the labor force. Therefore, they don't constitute being recorded as unemployed. So, you know, that's an extreme example, but anyone who's underemployed, they don't have a full-time job for whatever reason, and there are many, or are working full-time at a minimum wage job, are going to be faced with food insecurity and potentially with insufficient support in the form of SNAP benefits, child care benefits, and other forms of public assistance. And so that kind of squeeze presents an incredible challenge on households. So we as a society need to come up with better policies so that folks don't face that cliff effect and are pushed off the edge and instead are incentivized with what we would like to call a glide path, where their benefits are gradually reduced as their income increases and as their stability in the workforce increases so that they can be successful. And in the long run, we as a society will benefit from that because we won't have to pay for public benefits for so many people who fall behind and between the cracks when they're pushed off that cliff.
So you say we got to come up with better policies. And I wonder if you believe that our policymakers in Massachusetts are thinking about food insecurity in a comprehensive way. Because one of the things that stood out to me in Shannon's story, Andrew, was that, you know, one of the real limiting factors for her was transportation. She said when she and her family were staying in that motel shelter, there wasn't a bus route right there and they didn't own a car. And so even though she had SNAP benefits, she had to just go to like the local convenience store. She didn't have access or ready access to a supermarket with fresh, healthy food. So I think when we think about transportation, we think about, you know, the pain in the neck commute. But there's a food insecurity element to it too, right?
Absolutely. And transportation is one of those underlying barriers or underlying causes, as we like to call it, to hunger. And particularly out here in western Massachusetts, in a predominantly rural area, even in our small urban areas where public transportation is inadequate, it presents a big challenge, as Shannon described. So clearly we do need more transportation resources out here in western Massachusetts, any and every politician and almost any and every citizen out here in western Massachusetts will say the same and say that we're not getting our fair share from Boston and eastern Mass. So that's a perennial challenge that our legislative delegation out here constantly is chiming on and about. But there are many other challenges as well. You know, housing, affordable housing is a big one. And we know now that it's becoming an issue in eastern Massachusetts. The state government is taking a look at that as well. So there are all kinds of issues that I do believe our western Massachusetts delegation and many in eastern Mass are looking at in terms of how to resolve in a forward-thinking, smart, effective manner. And until that happens, though, we need to put food on people's tables. And fortunately, the state legislature and the governor have been behind supporting MEFAP, which is the Massachusetts Emergency Food Assistance Program, getting food to food banks across the Commonwealth so we can feed folks. But an example right now that the legislature is discussing and we believe is close to passing the finishing line is something called Breakfast After the Bell, which is a policy that would mandate all schools that have high percentages of kids who are eligible for free and reduced lunches to offer breakfast after the bell rings in the morning.
Which I think is something they do in I think it's something they do in Chicopee, actually, where Shannon lives now. So there's a good example.
Absolutely,
and
a number of schools across the Commonwealth. And what we would like to see is all of those schools that have high percentages of child poverty offering that breakfast after the bell. And unfortunately, many are resistant to it. And this law would mandate those schools with a higher child poverty rates in their communities to offer that. And what we've seen is that every school that is initially resistant to that policy, but once they implement it, everybody loves it. Teachers love it. Principals love it. Custodians love it. School department, school committees love it. And most importantly, kids and their parents and their family members love it as well, because kids are well fed. They can concentrate on advancing academically, and they don't wind up down in the nurse's office complaining of headaches and tummy aches.
That's Andrew Morehouse. He's the executive director of the Food Bank of Western Massachusetts. Andrew, thanks for joining us today.
Again, my pleasure. Thank you.
And listeners, this conversation about food insecurity is part of a WBUR series running all week about the future of food. Tomorrow, we'll have a special live broadcast of Radio Boston on food. Join us at WBUR City Space at 3 o'clock. Our guests are the culinary Oprah, L. Simone Scott of America's Test Kitchen, James Beard Award-winning chef Tony Messina, and Ron Shake, the force behind Panera Bread, Life Alive, and Tate. Plus, we'll talk about the Instagram effect on food culture. Get free tickets at wbur.org/cityspace. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Callum Borchers. This is Radio Boston.